The first person who's going to speak is John Pennington, and there's some information about him in the programme. But I'd just like to let you know that I've been an admirer of John's since about 2006 or 7, when I saw him presenting an IT conference in Wellington on some of the work that he was doing at the time. And I won't go into details because I suspect he might tell you a bit about it, but that work was about engaging people with widely different perspectives on important issues in New Zealand society and trying to build a sense of a way forward when there was a huge level of disagreement. And it was a way of allowing people to, ordinary people within New Zealand society, to make those decisions rather than handing them over to lawyers or to specialists. To me, that's one of the kind of areas of our culture that, and of our society, that is hugely important, that we manage to work across boundaries of perspective, belief, understanding, and come up with solutions that may not be perfect for us individually, but basically suit us all. So I will hand over to John and let him speak to you.
Right. Thanks, Jan. Kia ora tato. It's really nice to be in this fantastic building, actually. I realise that the title is probably somewhat pessimistic, actually. It was probably in a mode of slightly pessimism when I wrote it. But nevertheless, there are some fairly odd things going on at the moment. Think of the Trumps, the Le Pens, the Dutertes, etc., etc. It's probably not a bad thing to think, you know, peer into whether, you know, democracy is actually flourishing or floundering. I promise you that I'll lift it up a little bit towards the end. So just by way of a little bit of background, I've done my time in the kind of halls of democracy. I was a reasonably senior figure in the Alliance Party for a number of years, worked closely with Lila Harrow. Many of you may remember Lila. And then after the Alliance imploded, I spent 6-7 years as manager of the Bioethics Council, which was a really interesting body, and it's what Jan was referring to earlier. Just to refresh maybe quickly, the Bioethics Council, Toitū Taiao, came about as a result of the Royal Commission on Genetic Modification back in 2000, and it was one of the recommendations. And as a result of that Royal Commission, the Council was appointed to undertake the cultural, ethical and spiritual dimensions of biotechnology by engaging in dialogue with ordinary members of the public. And I think that's an amazing thing, the cultural, ethical, spiritual dimensions of biotechnologies. It's hard to imagine, at least for me today, a body like that being established. And then more recently, a very good friend of mine and I have created a little consultancy based here, public engagement projects, and essentially what we do is we try and work with organisations at whatever level, local government, public, private, and our key is the role of listening in how organisations can function better. So many organisations want to just transmit messages in a one-way kind of delivery. So we're trying to get organisations to open up to others in a more two-way sort of form of communication. So briefly, what I'll try and do very quickly is look at the idea of political activity and human flourishing and the current state of democratic politics, and then some two examples that actually demonstrate how democratic, well, I think how democratic politics could be strengthened in the way that we might want to head or think about heading. For those who you were here last night, there was a notion of, you know, what it is, what it means to flourish. And I think, you know, we can travel back in historical time, and I think Aristotle actually presents us with a really interesting kind of way of understanding or thinking through what flourishing might mean. He has this notion, which was very common in the Greek world generally, of eudaimonia, which is the highest good, and it's not happiness in the sense that we tend to think of happiness today. It's not a subjective, how am I feeling, am I feeling kind of content kind of happiness, although that could be part of it. But it's more a sense of well-being and flourishing. So it's less of a subjective thing. It's not what people like, it's what people are like, right? And so this reorientates, I think, our understanding of ethics and politics in quite a dramatic, far-reaching way, because it shifts it from the subjective to the objective. I can only flourish if you're all flourishing. I can only reach my potential if all of you are reaching your potential. So it becomes a political requirement for us to work out, because we all have different ideas what flourishing, what the good might be. So it is intensely political affair how it is that we arrange society that we all flourish. So we need the kinds of institutions that allow us to do that. And of course, for Aristotle, it was you achieved a sort of flourishing society by being practicing the virtues, flourishing or floundering. So the reason I put this slide in, which is the best I could come up with, was that notion of sort of two forces, but it's more than two forces, but countervailing forces. And I would suggest today that whereas in the post-Second World War period, that capitalism and politics, democracy, kind of balanced each other out to some extent, that since the 1970s, there's been a disembedding of capitalism, if you like, right? So decision-making, which was relatively evenly shared, is now less evenly shared. It's shifted more to elites and those with financial clout and power than it has with ordinary people. So, the state of politics today. Well, in 2016, Victoria University conducted a survey on who do we trust. And just 8% of people who completed the survey had complete or lots of trust in Parliament and journalists. 8%. And of course, journalists and the media slash media are absolutely critical for the functioning of a healthy democracy. That, to my way of thinking, is a bad sign. 61% of people thought that the government did not equally and fairly consider their interests. You know, once again, an extremely high number. And only 61% of people between the age of 18 and 29 actually voted, who were eligible to vote, voted in the last election. Now, these are all things that are aspects that are really common to democracies worldwide, but I think something that, you know, we should be really aware of. Well, how do we get here? Well, the British academic Colin Crout has suggested we're now entering a post-democratic phase. And for democracy, his idea of democracy is where the mass of people have, you know, lots of opportunities to actively engage and participate in determining the kinds of policies and laws that affect them, and that they actually take up those opportunities. He's suggesting now that we're moving increasingly away from that, even though we still have all the democratic institutions. We're able to vote, we're able to boot out the bastards if we don't like them, we have all that sort of stuff still there, but his work and others of a similar nature show a shifting trend towards elites and the more powerful actually being making the important decisions. So how did this all come about? Well, I think that this would be familiar to many people here. We've had massive amounts of deregulation. Regulation that used to be at the nation-state level has now moved to the global level, but doesn't have the same kinds of ability to manage the kinds of economic decision-making that used to happen at the nation-state level. The disappearance of unions, or largely being hollowed out. Shareholders' interests over workers' interests. I mean, I think that cutting back of the welfare state, the hollowing out of the welfare state, and that's partly because of the way that public goods versus private goods are perceived. So public goods are seen as sort of grey or boring, universalisable. Private goods are sort of seen as sexy. You know, if I don't like this one, I can go and buy that one, you know, and there's a real problem there. So we've seen, you know, the collapse of voting, pessimism about democracy. We've seen the rise of populism and so forth. Party membership has evaporated. Not a great kind of story, really. But nevertheless, I think, you know, getting on to the more positive aspects, and I wanted to take two examples of where I think, you know, we can start to claim back some of that mass participation and ways of doing that. And the first one is, as Jan briefly alluded to it, that was some of the work we did at the Bioethics Council. And I just quickly run through this project that we ran on pre-birth testing, Who Gets Born? So this was the final project that we did before we were euphemistically done away with. And so pre-birth testing, I'll just run you quickly through some of the things here. So it includes scans and amniocentesis, pre-implantation genetic diagnosis. All right, so it's a pretty controversial thing because basically women can go and have these tests. If they have fetuses that have abnormalities, then there is the chance that they could abort these. you know. And then there's the chance of also with pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, you know, using gene therapy to treat. So there are lots of questions, lots of cultural, ethical and spiritual questions that emerge out of these things. Who decides, you know, on what basis? What might be the consequences? Really critical questions. As I said before, the Bioethics Council was tasked with engaging in dialogue with ordinary members of the public on the cultural, ethical and spiritual dimensions of biotechnology. And so traditionally, and that's still largely the case in New Zealand, public participation means consultation, right? Government, local bodies, whatever, go out there with sort of almost predetermined programs and, you know, ask citizens, what do they think of this, all right? There's no real sense of citizens actually framing the ways that they think might be important, the aspects of an issue that might be important. And particularly in science and biosciences area, the emphasis has been on expertise, science, scientists, maybe a few ethicists thrown in. And this was particularly prevalent during the 2000s, the first half of the 2000s anyway. These issues are just not for specialists, all right? They affect us all. When the council started initially, it undertook, as I said, dialogue, which was our understanding of dialogue, was being open to others and not trying to foreclose your thinking already in place before you opened yourself to what others had to say and where they were coming from. And that was, it worked really well. We conducted dialogue groups all around the country, but it left us in a bit of a vulnerable position when it came to sort of how we could assist policymakers. Lots of rich material, but how then we then shape that up to assist policymakers design policy. So we moved from, well, we broadened our approach to what we call deliberative democracy. And deliberation is much more about confronting people or people engaging with a whole range of different perspectives and having to think through those perspectives and having to look for some of the, even if they don't represent your own particular perspective, you're looking for something that might be positive in that perspective. So you're actually being challenged by that. The project, Pre-Birth Testing, Who Gets Born project, had three phases. It had a framing phase and a deliberative phase and then a reporting phase. And the framing phase, we actually went out to groups of ordinary people and through a process that we ran, we got them to frame up what was important to them in terms of these issues with pre-implantation genetic diagnosis. So it rebalanced the kind of expert thing. In the deliberative phase, we held face-to-face events throughout the country. We drew on NGOs, community organisations. We got people to come to these meetings by responding to newspaper advertisements. We went on Trade Me and recruited people through there. Lots and lots of different mechanisms to get people in. And we held 18 events around the country, 4 hui and a Pacific whānau, and we had over 250 people attended. And just two quick anecdotes. We used kindergartens a lot to recruit people, and we'd pay them $500. They would get us a bunch of people and put on some food. And my colleague, Simon, attended one in Timaru, and somebody, as soon as they arrived, somebody said, oh, how long do we have to stay? You know, we're really only here for, because to support the kindy, you know, we're not really interested in the topic. And they said, well, you know, three hours. Is that it? Oh, all right, okay. Well. By 2.5 hours gone, they're beavering away, and Simon's saying, well, we're going to have to go. We've got a plane to catch in half an hour. Oh, yeah, okay, all right. 3 hours is up. No, we've got to go. We're going to miss this plane. Oh, well, no, well, we want to keep on working. From the same person that, you know. So talk about flourishing. I was at a meeting or a deliberative event in Whangarei, and you're never quite sure who's going to turn up at these things. And I remember basically the room ended up sort of 50-50 split between a bunch of fundamentalist Christians and people from Women's Refuge. And you couldn't probably get a more disparate crowd, actually. And I'm thinking, I wonder how this one's going to go, you know. But it just says something about, A, people, their willingness when they're engaged in a process that treats them as adults and respects their views, that They managed, all of them, to stay in the room, which I thought was a significant achievement, and managed to reach a number of agreements on a number of different issues, you know, practical things. And that's really what you're trying to do. You're trying to reach some kind of sense of commonality, some sense of consensual agreement. I mean, you're not going to get it in a topic like that, which has abortion in it, you're not going to get total agreement across all aspects of it. But it's remarkable how much you can get. And it's not to deny the difference there either. It's important to recognise. And we also ran an online deliberation process, which was incredibly successful. And we are, and I'll briefly talk about WorkJan, that is an online deliberative event. It was a fantastic project to be involved in. Collective action for collective goods. Once again, that statement about democracy. Thrives when there are major opportunities for the mass of ordinary people to actively participate through discussion and autonomous organisations in shaping the agenda of public life, and when these opportunities are actively used by them. And I think that sums it up pretty neatly, actually. Scoop's Media Hive Mind Initiative. Right, Scoop Media. I'm sure you're all aware of Scoop Media. Fantastic bunch. Provides. You don't know anything about it? Okay. Ah. All right, so it's an online media service. Jan might have a little plug later on, actually. It works off the smell of an oily rag. I don't think that's telling anything that's not well known. It has one of the best journalists in the country working for it, and a bunch of really committed people, Jan being one of them. We know that the media is in deep goo at the moment. Many of you will be aware of the attempted combination of the two Australian media organisations, which the Commerce Commission kicked back the other day for the second time. I mean, their business models, their audience are fragmented, the whole online thing is just, you know, it's a total disruption. In talking to Jan last year, Simon and I put forward a proposal, a possibility, maybe Scoop might be interested in engaging their audiences in more of a two-way sort of conversation around an issue, an important issue to ordinary members of the public. So this brought about Scoop's Hive Mind Initiative. You know, when I initially saw the Hive Mind, I'm thinking beehive, the parliament, kind of thinking, oh, is it good? But yeah, no, it's great. It's fantastic. It's their new public engagement platform. And it's, once again, it's just an opportunity where traditionally the media has been kind of a one-way method, mode of dissemination, which is absolutely fantastic. It's not a case of trying to undermine that or change it at all. That good journalism is absolutely fundamental. But I think, as you're all probably aware, the kind of online space has been, unfortunately to date, a disappointment, actually. I mean, lots of the online discussion opportunities are just opportunities to shout at each other, right? So we wanted to take some of the learning and the experience we had from the Bioethics Council deliberative approach, where you present people with different perspectives and run them through a process where they weren't just allowed to sit in their little boxes and just sort of lob things at other people. So the first topic was sugar, which is a topical thing. And it was a pilot project to test this new mode of political discussion, promote a more active citizenry. Because there's one thing, government dealing with complex issues, there's also the issue of how government operates or engages its citizens, but it's also how citizens operate or engage one another across space and time in terms of issues. So that was just how it was advertised. What I remember, there will be, up to the election, more hive mind issues that I encourage you, all of you, to go on to the Scoop Media site and engage in, because they're really quite fascinating. It kicked off December 2016, it ran for 4 weeks. And as I said, it was the issue was sugar and sugar consumption and, you know, the danger this proposes to health and the associated costs of that danger to health. And once again, what we were taking from our experience at the Bioethics Council, deliberative approaches to decision making are about trying to find some agreed sense of where we might be able to progress, instead of just lobbying things at each other. So it really is about trying to get some sort of positive way forward. So we developed 4 different perspectives and they weren't all the perspectives that were available, but they represent some of the more mainstream perspectives that people hold. So some people hold a very individualistic view. It's my body. I'll do whatever I want to do with it. If I want to eat as much sugar or drink as much sugar, fine. There are other perspectives as well, obviously. I won't run through them now. Through this process, we did get some strong agreement around things, like the regulation of advertising. There was strong agreement that this needed to be done. The government needed to step in and do something. There needed to be better education and consumer information. Encourage measures to take more physical activity, regulating the amount of sugar in drink products, encouraging behaviour change, and even there was quite a bit of agreement on instituting a tax regime. Although people thought about really quite deeply and were concerned that any tax might impose a negative effect on the poor. So there was some really nuanced thinking. But even those people who didn't support normally taxes still thought that it needed to be looked at very, very carefully. How do we do this? Well, there are a number of different tools out there in terms of engaging people online in a deliberative process. And the one that we've been piloting and testing is called Polis. So it's an online survey tool for collecting and analysing and representing open-ended feedback from large groups of people. So it's not as detailed as a face-to-face kind of engagement, but it can operate at a very large scale, and you can run it with the kinds of different perspectives that people have. And it works through artificial intelligence. It's able to, and this slide shows you, it's able to cluster. So you can see this when you engage with Polis on an issue, such as sugar, you can start to see, and that there will be statements that come up, and you can agree, disagree, or pass on them. And you can start to see represented where you fit into the various opinion, and it clusters the different opinions. So in this, it clustered three different groups, of which 97% agreed on restrictions on advertising. And it also, it's got some clever stuff about it, and it can show not only the difference of opinion, but also the similarities across different opinions as well. So you can start to collect up, automatically collect up data that shows, oh, okay, out of all these different groups, there are a bunch of things that they actually do agree on, which would help take us forward. More of that's coming up, I say, on Scoop Media in the course of the next few months towards the election. Look out for it and hopefully join up. Thanks very much.
Enlightening talk. And one of the things I'd like to say is I got involved in this project, both as obviously as somebody who helped to sort of frame up some of the perspectives, but also as somebody who actually took part in answering the questions. And what was absolutely fascinating to me, which was that it changed me and my perspective on the issue of sugar. So in one respect, one of them was the neoliberal kind of nobody should tell me what to put in my body kind of question. And I thought about it and I said, no, nor they should. You know, like, it's a question that normally I would have had a completely different response to. I would have thought, well, should retailers be able to sell unhealthy food? And the other area in which was quite sort of personal to me was someone came up with a sort of level of disappointment with the way that we'd framed the questions and brought up the whole issue of mental health and overweight, obesity. And here am I, kind of taking part in a debate on sugar, on healthy eating, and I hadn't put myself into the frame. And to me, that was a fundamentally important thing about this process, which was that rather than being somebody who was looking at it from a third party, it became something with which I was totally engaged in terms of the ideas. And to me, that really speaks of the kind of richness of this sort of an approach. But anyway, I'd like to do what we did yesterday, actually, and just give you the opportunity to talk about, so in the face of that information, what comes up? Well, we'll bring our conversations to an end, and